Case number 20-5134, United States of America versus Richard Mewkes. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Thomas, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. Good morning, judges. Robert Thomas with the Shelby County Bar for the appellant, Richard Mewkes. And also, we're going to ask to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal in this matter. The basis of our appeal in this matter with regards to Mr. Mewkes is based upon three issues that came up at the sentencing hearing for Mr. Mewkes, where he pled guilty to being a convicted felon in possession of a firearm. And they were based on an enhancement for Mr. Mewkes, where it was contended that he possessed the firearm in connection with another felony offense that led to a 4-level enhancement under the guidelines. Also, another 2-level enhancement for creating a risk of endangerment during flight with the firearm. And then also the last issue, remaining issue, was whether or not Mr. Mewkes was entitled to his acceptance of responsibility based upon his contest of this other relevant conduct. As we cited in our brief, with regards to the 4-level enhancement for the possession of a firearm in connection with another felony offense, our contention is that from the beginning, Mr. Mewkes had admitted that he was in possession of the firearm on the day in question. The question or the issue at sentencing was whether or not shots were fired in front of the house of his then and current girlfriend, I believe Victoria Davis. And at the sentencing
Mr. Thomas, I want to interrupt you there. I'm going to ask you a question, which I think is actually, well, should turn out to be of some benefit to you. But I ask it early in your argument because I want Ms. Irwin to have an opportunity to think about this too. The felony that is involved, and I mean, the provision is that the enhancement can be imposed only if the firearm is used or possessed in connection with another felony offense, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And the felony at issue here, the offense at issue here is a state statute, TCA 3913103. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And are you aware, I suspect you are not, because this doesn't show up in your brief, that under Tennessee law, you cannot be convicted of that felony offense if what you're doing is merely shooting in the air. And there are a couple of, there's a state case or two to that effect, and several Sixth Circuit cases interpreting that Tennessee statute. How would that affect your argument if what I said is the case?
Your Honor, I think it would affect it twofold. I think one, we didn't include that argument in our brief. I'm aware of those cases with regards to, well, the state cases, not the federal cases, with regards to the firing the firearm up in the air. I think, I think that does go to our issue. I think it does go work, play, goes to our argument with regards to this firearm was not possessed in connection with another felony offense. I think the reason it was excluded on our behalf, Your Honor, is because Mr. Mewkes' contention the entire time has been that the firearm was never fired in this matter.
And well, so what if the court makes an adverse factual finding for you on that basis, which, as I understand, I think that Judge Norris did.
That's correct. And with the adverse ruling, I think it still goes to I think it's still play. I think those cases still point to the fact that this firearm couldn't be held to be possessed in connection with another felony offense if the adverse ruling against us is essentially that Mr. Mutes fired the firearm in the air, did not fire at any individual or anything along those lines, or did not fire at the home. So I think it works both ways.
Was that what the finding of the district judge was that your client fired into the air, or did the district judge find that your client fired into the house?
The finding was that the government met their burden to show that he fired into the air.
Well, the only proof was that he fired into the air, and that came from the tapes of Ms. Davis that were played, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. And then also there was an unsworn statement from Ms. Davis as well. And then the affidavit of complaint was the only other evidence that was offered besides Mr. Mutes' testimony to the contrary.
So you also have a challenge about the reckless endangerment enhancement?
Yes, Your Honor, with regards to the reckless endangerment enhancement, I'm aware of the cases that are fairly clear with regards to a person who discards a weapon in the course of flight from police. Our issue in this case with regards to Mr. Mutes, and it seems to be an issue that has not been really previously addressed by this court, is whether or not that enhancement applies when someone at the direction of police orders drops the firearm and then flees after dropping the firearm. And so in Mr. Mutes' case, where I think it distinguishes from other cases that have come up on appeal on this same issue, is that Mr. Mutes was actually seen walking down the street with the firearm in his hand, was ordered to stop, drop the firearm, and get on the ground. So essentially, Mr. Mutes, and with his own testimony, and I think the affidavit complaint supports it as well, he did stop, he did drop the firearm as ordered, but then he ran. And so the last part of getting on the ground is where he didn't comply with police orders. And what we argue is that him running after the fact does not rise to the level to support the enhancement under that provision of the guidelines. And again, it's a little different than the other cases that have been decided based upon discarding of a firearm in the course of fleeing or while fleeing, because here the firearm was essentially surrendered in front of police and then Mr. Mutes ran. And after a short foot chase was apprehended.
Would there be circumstances where discarding a firearm at the command of the police could, and then fleeing, could constitute reckless endangerment during flight?
Based upon my reading of that guideline, I would tend to argue that it wouldn't be. I guess the circumstances with regards to who's around or what have you could play into it. But my reading of the cases has always gone to whether or not there could be a risk of other people being injured. Of course, the defendant being excluded with regards to those other individuals. And so I think in most circumstances where I think the police are essentially there to arrest the defendant is complying with the orders with regards to dropping the firearm, and then choosing to flee afterwards, I think I would argue that I can't see a situation or a circumstance where the enhancement would apply under those facts, which again are unique with regards to the other cases I've read on this enhancement.
Yes, I was just gonna go on to your third point.
And our third point, again, is probably the most straightforward. It is essentially at sentencing, Mr. Mutes was the government, which was within their discretion, did not move for the third point for acceptance of responsibility, but the court went one step further and took away the other 2 points for acceptance of responsibility in this matter based upon Mr. Mewkes's denial of the other relevant conduct. And our argument is essentially purely based on the guidelines that states that essentially these were issues that were brought to the court's attention during the change of plea hearing. And during that hearing, Mr. Mewkes fully admitted that he was a convicted felon, that he knew he was a convicted felon, that he was in possession of that firearm. The issue all along was brought up before the court with regards to these other sentencing enhancements that we knew would be contested at the sentencing hearing. And that, at the change of plea, was submitted as being sufficient on as far as the court and the government were concerned. I think based upon the proof that was presented during the sentencing hearing with regards to Mr. Mewkes' behavior and these enhancements, our argument is simply that it was a non-frivolous contest with regards to the relevant conduct. Therefore, it did not change his acceptance of responsibility with regards to this charge.
Thank you. Ms. Irwin?
Good morning. May it please the court, Rainey Irwin for the United States. Your Honors, this court should affirm the district court's application of the guideline enhancements for possession of a firearm in connection with another felony offense and reckless endangerment during flight, and also the district court's decision to withhold the 2-level adjustment for acceptance of responsibility should also be affirmed where the defendant falsely denied or frivolously challenged relevant conduct that the district court did find to be true. First, going to talk about another felony offense, and that felony offense being the reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. And I will speak directly to Your Honor, Judge Gibbons, question with regard to the shots fired in the air with regard to the state case. What I would assert, Your Honors, is that under 14A of the application note, if the firearm had the potential to facilitate another felony offense, then it doesn't matter whether a criminal charge was brought or a conviction was obtained on that. In this case, the district court judge heard the jail tapes.
Well, doesn't it have to be at least a felony under state law as opposed to not the conduct not being a felony under state law?
That's correct, Your Honor. But when the district
court, there's case law that says that what Ms. Davis described is not a felony under state law, then how do we get to the point of applying that 4-level enhancement?
Well, in listening to the jail tapes, the district court judge heard Ms. Davis stating that the defendant threatened to kill her, was shooting up and around the house, and that there were other family members that were at the house, including her nephews, her mother, and her uncle. And
he also said he was firing in the air, although I guess he was near the house, right?
That's correct. And what the district court judge found was that at least one shot was fired. And specifically in listening to those jail tapes, it appeared that the defendant was shooting around the house and threatening to shoot individuals in the house with the firearm. And that
when you say the district judge found at least one shot was fired, did the district judge find that it was fired in the air?
I don't believe he specifically stated that.
But the jail tape said the shots were fired in the air, correct? Whatever else he said.
Right. In addition to the fact that she said he was shooting around her mother's house.
But she never said in the jail tapes that he was shooting at the house, correct?
That's correct.
You know, you were able to admit those jail tapes because the rules of evidence, and without authenticating them in any way, because the rules of evidence, strictly speaking, don't apply in sentencing hearings, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
But apparently, Ms. Davis didn't cooperate with the probation officer and presumably you didn't feel comfortable calling her as a witness either. So you played the tapes. Is that correct?
Your Honor, it was the government's concern that we did not want to re-victimize Ms. Davis and have her have to come in and relive this experience, which is why we felt that her statement to police officers on the date of that the offense occurred, when it was fresh in her mind, as well as the jail tapes, which those conversations took place just mere hours after the reckless endangerment or aggravated assault occurred, we felt that that was sufficient proof for the district court to make a determination as to whether or not the enhancement should apply. But it was primarily out of concern for the victim and not wanting the victim to have to relive the circumstances of this case if it was not necessary.
Were you at all concerned about what she might say, given that she hadn't cooperated with the probation officer? That's not terribly germane. That was just my trial judge head thinking about that.
No, we believe that she would have testified consistently. She did not show up at the sentencing hearing on behalf of the defendant. She was not there at all. And we did not, again, want her to have to relive the traumatic events of that night.
There is proof that they were together as of the time of the sentencing, right?
That was Mr. Mukes' self-serving statement. That's true, Your Honor. But again, Ms. Davis was not at the sentencing hearing in support of him or on behalf of him at all. With regard to the enhancement for reckless endangerment during flight, unless Your Honors have any additional questions on the last one. Thank you, Your Honor. If the defendant recklessly created a substantial risk of death or serious bodily injury to another person in the course of fleeing from a law enforcement officer, we believe that the plus two enhancement was appropriate in this case. That information was supported by the arrest ticket as well as the affidavit. Both the arrest ticket and the affidavit.
Now, the affidavit of complaint says he dropped the gun, then he fled, right? And it's the sworn statement. The arrest report, which is unsworn, says something else, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. But both the arrest ticket and the sworn affidavit were written by the same officer. They were both authored by Officer C. Wilson. And if you look closely at the arrest ticket, it clearly is much longer as far as paragraphs. It has much more detail with regard to the incident that occurred than what's in the affidavit.
Does the district court analyze why he chose to believe the arrest report over the sworn affidavit of complaint, or does he just say finds in the government's favor? I'm asking that. I can't exactly remember what he said. That's a point of information.
I believe the district court considered both the arrest ticket and the affidavit of complaint. And the affidavit of the arrest ticket specifically states, gives more detail with regard to the flight that took place. The arrest ticket specifically states that the defendant was ordered to stop and drop the gun and that the defendant ran and then threw the firearm. And while I do understand that there's a discrepancy between the arrest ticket and the affidavit, again, the affidavit appears to be more of a summary. It was authored by the exact same officer. He wrote the arrest ticket, which was way more detailed. In the arrest ticket, for example, he stated that the firearm was loaded with a round in the chamber, and that was not in the affidavit of complaint. So I think the district court judge considered both the arrest ticket and the affidavit and made a determination that the reckless endangerment during flight enhancement should apply. With respect to acceptance of responsibility credit, the district court did find that the defendant had not accepted responsibility for the underlying crime of reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon and denied that reduction. It is the defendant's burden to show by a preponderance of the evidence that he's accepted responsibility. And I believe based on the defendant's brief, the defendant believes that merely pleading guilty and giving a statement to probation is all that's required in order to get the reduction. With respect to the district court judge's consideration in this case, under section 3E1.1, the sentencing court is in a unique position to evaluate and acceptance of responsibility and should be entitled that great deference. In this case, the court found that the defendant did fire the firearm and also threw the firearm after he fled and therefore created a reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon and reckless endangerment during flight. And after the defendant testified, did not feel that the defendant was truthful in his testimony. Therefore, the district court judge denied the defendant the two-level adjustment for acceptance of responsibility credit. And we would ask this court to affirm.
Any further questions?
If this court has no further questions, we ask this court to affirm the decision of the district court judge. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Thomas?
Yes, Judge.
Your rebuttal time.
Yes, thank you. First, I would like to start. I'm trying to remember back to the sentencing hearing, and I don't believe, and I may be incorrect on this, but I don't believe the arrest ticket was offered as proof during the sentencing hearing in this matter. But in the event it was, I'm just not remembering that. I would submit with regards to that discrepancy between the arrest ticket and affidavit complaint, that would be our issue. It still comes up to, as far as the affidavit complaint being an actual sworn document, in contrast to the arrest ticket, which again is unsworn, with the affidavit being presented to the state court. So I understand the government's argument with regards to the arrest ticket having more information, but I would submit that the affidavit complaint was the only sworn testimony besides the live testimony that was presented by the government with regards to how this incident happened and how it occurred. When addressing the jail calls between Ms. Davis and Mr. Mutes, one thing that I feel that at least from my sense of the sentencing hearing, was that there was a lot made of the jail calls with regard to Mr. Mutes not, I guess, during the jail calls with Ms. Davis kind of yelling at him and kind of telling him what happened, there was no denial by Mr. Mutes with regards to those arguments with Ms. Davis, and to the extent that his silence was held against him, again, that was another issue with regards to the sentencing hearing that we think that was the district court erred is in regards to taking his silence and using that against him with regards to essentially not arguing back and forth with Ms. Davis during these jail calls. Finally, with regard to some of the issues that were contested, and we cited to these in our brief, there were, more often than not, there were instances where the district court held that, where the district court, I guess, had questions about whether or not the burden had actually been met, but then also ruled in the government's favor. And that was another issue that we brought up in the brief with regards to whether or not the government met their burden on these issues with regards to that. And so that was another issue we had with regards to the enhancements. Finally, again, with regards to the acceptance of responsibility, we're acknowledging that it does require more than just an admittance with regards to accepting, pleading guilty to the case, and then submitting the acceptance of responsibility statement. But again, I think the government's argument misses the point to where if a defendant has a non-frivolous argument to relevant conduct, then the guidelines are clear that he should not lose his acceptance of responsibility. Here, with all the issues with regards to the discrepancies between the testimony and the documents that were submitted, even in light of the case law with regards to a gun being fired in the air, when you examine Mr. Mewkes' denial of that relevant conduct and these important issues that create these enhancements, it's a non-frivolous argument.
Thank you. And your time has expired. Thank you both for your argument. The case will be submitted.